About 2 months ago, I was in Cleveland, Ohio, and I was speaking for a group of people that evening, and it was in the morning. It was about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was doing a meditation, and I had been reading, I was reading from a book that I'll share with you in a few moments. And in this meditation, I got a vision that I should make a telephone call. And the number flashed across the screen of my inner world. And it was the number of my friend and his wife from 30 years before, whom I hadn't seen in about 30 years. And he was a medical doctor. His name was Dean. And his wife, her name was Linda. She was my girlfriend when I was in high school, the one that had promised when I went away that when I came back she would marry me. And she went to the University of Michigan and met this guy in medical school, and she married him. And I was really in love with Linda when I was in high school, from 9th grade to 12th grade. I used to carry my world literature book in front of me. You remember? Every time I'd see her walking down the hall. And I went into the Navy when I graduated, and she went up to Michigan and she met Dean. And they got married and had a family, and we became very good friends when I got back from the service and I went to school in Detroit. We started, when I got married, and we started going on ski trips and things together and so on. And I hadn't seen them in a long, long time, maybe 25 or 30 years. And the number just came right up. When I came out of the meditation, I called. And I dialed the number, 419-6. And Dean answered the telephone. Now, it had been almost 3 decades since I've talked to them. And I said, "Dean, what are you doing home? I was calling to talk to Linda." And he said, "Well," he said, "you know, he has a practice. He's an internist, medical doctor, in Sandusky, and he's been there for a long time. I don't know what happened, but he's now 64 years old, something. I don't know what that's about. He's now getting ready to retire." And I said to him, what are you doing home on a Friday morning?" He said, "Well," he said, "last week I had surgery." I said, "You had surgery?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "For the last 3 years, I've been walking with a cane, and I haven't been able to get around, and I had real bad rheumatoid arthritis in my hip, and I just had a hip replacement." I said, "Oh." He said, "Well," he said, "yeah, I'm recovering now." He said, "But next year, next March," which is a few months from now, he said, "I'm going to have the other hip done." He said, "Then in a year or so," he said, "I'm going to have my left knee done because it's really bad. And then probably down the road, I'll have to have the other knee done because I've got this arthritis, my lower extremity." I said, "Oh, that's really too bad." As I was getting depressed, I said, "Is Linda home?" He said, "I see you on TV every once in a while, and I've heard some of your tapes." And he said, "I understand that you run a lot." I said, "Yes, I run every day. I run 8 miles every day. And I've done that every day for, well, since 1976. And he said, "Well," he said, "that's a lot of running and a lot of wear and tear in the body." He said, "You're a good candidate for a hip replacement yourself." I was really getting depressed with this conversation, wondering why I had even called. And I said to him right away, "I will never have a hip replacement." And he said, "You can't just say you'll never have a hip replacement. You can't just come out and say that." I said, "Well, I'm coming out and I'm saying it. I will never have a hip replacement." He said, "Well, you could just get arthritis." I said, "Dean, I don't do arthritis." I said, "I will never get arthritis." He said, you can't just make a statement like that, that you're just never going to get arthritis. I said, I just won't get arthritis. That's something I won't do in my life. He said, well, it's not possible for you to just, he said, you're just as arrogant as you were 30 years ago, for God, you know. And that was sort of the end of the conversation. And then about a week or two later, I was at a benefit, and a woman, Phyllis, was there, and she was talking about her mother. And she was saying that her mother has Alzheimer's disease, and she's got it pretty bad, and she feels real bad when she sees her mother going through what she's going through. And she said, but the worst part of it is, and Phyllis is my age exactly, she's 59. And she said, the thing of it is, I've been noticing that I've been forgetting things lately, and I'm very concerned that I'm going to get Alzheimer's myself. And then I don't know what Harvey would do, and I don't know, you know, what her husband and so on. And I said, well, why don't you just say that you're not going to get Alzheimer's? Why not just make that declaration? She said the same words as Dean. She said, you can't just come out and say you're not going to get Alzheimer's. You can't just come out and say something like that. I said, why can't you say that? She said, well, what if I get it? I said, well, if you say you won't, then you won't get it. She said, well, don't you forget things? I said, yeah, I forget things. She said, well, aren't you concerned that you... I said, absolutely not. I said, I will never have Alzheimer's. She said, you can't just say you'll never have that. It was very, very disconcerting to her that I would make such a declaration, that I would be willing to say it with such a knowing that it would be impossible. She said, just play a little game with me. She said, what if you do get it? I said, I won't play that game. I don't play that game. I don't entertain thoughts like that in my consciousness. It's just not there for me. She said, well, just for a minute, it's just a little, you know, just a little pretend game. She said, just assume that, well, 20 years from now I come to you, I see you and you're 79 years old, and you've got Alzheimer's, and I say to you, so what do you say now? I would say, who are you? And why are you annoying me? Now, I don't say that to be belittling or to be disrespectful towards anybody who is going through hip and knee replacements or Alzheimer's or anything else. What I suggest, and I know this might sound a bit radical, but probably not to this group, but nevertheless, I suggest that everything in the universe is energy. It's all energy. And I don't have to really explain that if you were to take this microphone, which appears to be solid, and we were to break it down, and we were to look at it and examine it at its basic energy level, that what we would discover, what we would find, is that it is a dance. And there's a vibration in there. And these molecules that are vibrating at a certain speed are vibrating at such a speed that we call solidity, that which is solid, if you will. And that there are faster and faster levels of vibration that are available. And that even something like sound vibrates at a little higher frequency, and then light at a much higher frequency, and then beyond light is... what we call x-rays and things like this, which vibrate at a fast, and lasers, which vibrate at a fast, and ultimately we get to the element or the area of thought as a vibration, a very, 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 very fast vibration, and then spirit. And that all of this is like at faster and faster and faster vibrational frequencies.